Hello, Degrassi fans, and welcome to the Degrassi Kid Podcast, where each week we break down the history and impact of our favorite teen TV show. I'm Jocelyn, and this week I have a question for you. What if Alexa played drums for the Zit Remedy? What if Spike considered taking her own life? And what if Caitlin Ryan was assaulted? These are all story ideas that came from a real-life high school in 1989. Heinz Senger was a grade 12 teacher at Earl Marriott Secondary School in British Columbia. Heinz had an interest in filmmaking, and he designed one of the coolest high school classes that you've ever heard of. His students would watch Degrassi as it aired on TV, and then they would talk about how to build a character, how to create conflict, and why some stories just don't wrap up in a happy ending. Then each student would come up with three story ideas of their own. They'd choose one and start writing the first draft of a Degrassi script. Heinz and his class would work on this for a few weeks until they were ready to present their final project. Except they weren't just presenting it to each other. They were presenting it to the actual cast of Degrassi. The students focused their story ideas on two main characters from the show, then those actors got on an airplane, flew to Earl Marriott School, and heard their pitches. Together, they talked about what it's like to be on Degrassi, how their story ideas would fit into the show, and of course, the actors did what they do best. They actually acted out the scripts with the students who wrote them. This is something that only ever happened once in the history of Degrassi, and it all started when Heinz encouraged his students to write an opinion piece about violence, sex, and nudity on television. As young viewers, their opinions made their way into the newspaper called the Vancouver Sun, where it just so happened to catch the attention of a publicist who worked at CBC. And today, we're not just going to recap their story ideas for you, we're actually going to talk to the people who were really there. Today, we're checking in with the teacher, Heinz Senger, one of his students, Heidi McCurdy, and Degrassi's publicist, Catherine Ellis, as they take us through this moment in time on the Degrassi Kid Podcast.
Oh, the key should be there for you, whatever. Pull through whatever it takes. Oh, whatever it takes. Kids got you.
This story goes all the way back to 1989. But before we begin, I want to tell you a little bit about how we got here. My name is Jocelyn, and I'm a passionate Degrassi fan who's trained in journalism. A goal of mine has been to teach you all the Degrassi facts that I already know. Over the last 2 years, we've talked a lot about the history and impact of Degrassi as we know it. This year, I wanted to start learning more about the show. I wanted to take my journalism skills and see just how deep I can get into the parts of Degrassi's history that we've never heard of. I was lucky enough that I was given access to a Degrassi archive that features some of the interviews, conversations, and newsletters that have been lost to time. In that archive, I found a yellow binder called Degrassi High Pitches by Grade 12 Class. It was Heinz's assignment, and it was something that I'd never seen before. This teacher made a project where his students wrote pitches for Degrassi and then presented them to the actual Degrassi cast. And these stories were really good. I mean, Spike considers suicide, Caitlin's assaulted. These were all stories that I wanted to know more about. And for me, it wasn't enough to just sit down and read these stories to you. I wanted to use my training and my background to bring you back to this moment in time, to make you feel like you were almost a part of this class yourself. So I began researching, and that's when I found Heinz. I reached out to him, and he was over the moon to chat with me. He couldn't wait to sit down and talk about this project together. Then I started Googling his students, and I found one of them who still remembered the class. And by crazy coincidence, I had actually found this folder just days after I hung out with Degrassi's publicist, Catherine Ellis, who actually went on the trip. And she was more than happy to answer some questions for me when I asked her about it. And today we're going to hear from all of them. Each of them has taken the time to speak with me either through text or through a Zoom call, and we've talked about this neat moment in Degrassi's history. I'm telling you this because I want you to know how passionate I am about this project, about the Degrassi Kid Podcast. I know that I'm capable of using my journalism skills and my love for this show to bring you stories that you've never heard before. If you could consider supporting the Degrassi Kid podcast and going to patreon.com/DegrassiKid, one subscription can go a long way in making these projects possible. And with your support on Patreon, I bring you this episode as we explore Heidsanger's grade 12 class about Degrassi. You can just change the channel. That is what one of Heidsanger's students said in 1989 when asked about the increase of sex, violence, and nudity on television. Heinz had noticed an article in the Vancouver Sun. They were asking for readers to write in and share their opinion on this dividing topic. Heinz was a creative writing teacher at Earl Marriott Secondary School in British Columbia. At the time, he was using the show Degrassi Junior High to teach his students about film, television, and screenwriting. He gave them the prompt about violence and asked them to write about a page in response and then sent in their letters, completely unedited and unchanged and unfiltered. All of his students, who were only 17 or 18 at the time, shared the sentiment that sex, violence, and nudity on television was no big deal. Sandy McGonigal said, "There are limits to what can be shown on TV, but I don't think shows have gone past it." Melissa Butler said, "Most of the sitcoms that have sexual innuendo, like Cheers, aren't understood by children." She said, "When I was young, the leading sitcoms were MASH and Three's Company. They all had sexual innuendo. It wasn't until I grew up and watched the reruns that I even began to notice them," she said. Theresa May said it's really up to the parents to decide what their kids can and cannot watch, noting that grade school children often go to bed by 9 p.m. on school nights. And Brent Endridge offered a solution. Why not just air a warning before any TV show that has violence or sexuality? While this type of warning is common to us now, it didn't actually become mainstream to use warnings on television until about the 1990s. What I found interesting about this article is that Heinz's students are pretty much the only young people who write in to share their opinion. Most of the other people who wrote in are adults, writing from the perspective of a parent. One parent said they use their VCR to record movies in advance. That way, if a scandalous moment comes up, they can just skip through it. And the commercials, too. Another mom worries about her daughter who babysits on evenings and weekends. She can't monitor what she's watching on television past 9 o'clock. And one family even got rid of their TV set entirely because of the filth being shown on air. Though there are some adults who wrote in to say it's really no big deal and they think most people are overreacting. This class assignment became the launching point for Heinz to get discovered by Degrassi. He noted that he was using the show as a tool to teach his students about the media and what's represented. In the article, he said, "Degrassi dealt with topics such as homosexuality, child abuse, and teen pregnancy, yet not in a shocking manner. Adding that violence, sexual scenes, and foul language shouldn't be considered too taboo for television. They should, however, occur in a context that is appropriate to their characters," he said. But how did this opinion piece in the Vancouver Sun lead to the Degrassi cast coming to their school? I mean, Heinz was on the other side of the country compared to Degrassi. Well, I figured today, who better to ask that question to than Heidsanger himself? Here is Heidsanger, the creative writing teacher who taught a class about Degrassi.
Hi, Jocelyn. My name is Heidsanger. And now you're going to try to resurrect my memories from 35 years ago. I was a creative writing teacher at Earl Marriott Secondary School in Surrey, British Columbia. And one of the projects we did in class was my students wrote scripts for Degrassi. And somehow you got a hold of these scripts and they were at the University of Toronto. I don't know how they ever got there. You know, my mind is boggled here. But don't forget, this is 35 years ago, and sometimes I can't remember what happened yesterday.
Okay. So fair. We'll see what pieces of your memory that we can jog together. The first thing I'm curious about is, when did you start using this for your school, if you remember?
Yeah, okay. Hester Ellis, a journalist for the Vancouver Sun, in January of 1989, She had a column about, is there anything taboo that should not be on TV, like language and topics? And so I asked my creative writing students, "Hey, do you guys have any opinions on this?" So I said, "Write about a page to Hester Riches, and I will not read what you write. I'll come around and we'll just shove what you write in an envelope and we'll send it to her." And about a week later, there they were, published in the Vancouver Sun. And my students mentioned that they had seen Degrassi. And they said, Degrassi tackles all these subjects like death and teen pregnancy and animal cruelty. And they do it tastefully, but realistically. And when Hester Riches read this, she put that in her column that we explored the scripts of Degrassi and we watched episodes of Degrassi. And then about 2 or 3 weeks later, somebody from the CBC called me. And wow, that was a high. They said, would you like us to have a couple of actors come out to your school to meet your students? And I said, would I? And then one thing led to another, and Yik and Alexa came out to the school. My students then, I said, what I'd like you to do is to write a teaser for three characters, for Yik, for Alexa, and one for yourself. And then when they come out to class, you can be in a scene with them. And was that cool or what? And it was a lot of fun. And when they came out to the classroom, they actually performed the teasers that my students had written. And what was really cool, I thought, was Catherine Ellis said, she said, wow, some of these teasers are better than what we received in Degrassi. So that's a quick introduction.
That is, I literally have spent 2-3 weeks now diving into this. And even just hearing you recap, that still blows my mind. I can't believe you made that happen for your school. Do you remember telling your students and what their reactions were when they found out the Degrassi kids were coming to their school?
Well, yeah, they wanted to invite their friends. And then there was a sign outside on the marquee of the school. Yik and Alexa coming to EMS. And you know what actually happened? We had people phoning, wanting tickets. And of course, we didn't sell tickets to the event, okay? And the day that they came was about 8 a.m. There was a lineup outside of kids who didn't even go to the school who wanted autographs. It was amazing. It was a lot of fun, though.
It really went smooth.
In addition to my students being part of these scripts that they wrote, then we went down to the library where there was about 100 kids and there was a TV crew and the Vancouver Sun, Hester Riches was there and a couple of journalists. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I was curious about, you're standing there in a room, you're a teacher, you've just arranged this trip, you're watching your students read their scripts with the Degrassi cast. What kind of feelings were you going through at that time?
You know, what I try to do with my students is to bring the outside world into the classroom. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the issues oriented scripts that we saw in Degrassi really, really did that. And what kind of feelings, you asked? There were feelings that I felt good that my students saw themselves in the Degrassi shows that they watched. And I think that's probably the main reason that they enjoyed the show so much. And there were no other shows like that at the time. And you know what? And also, and that's why the kids enjoyed it. And you know what? It felt like, it didn't feel like school at all. It just felt like something magic happened. And it did happen.
That is so cool. What was your first introduction to Degrassi? Was it from learning about your students or had you found it yourself?
My daughters were the exact same age as the kids on Degrassi. And they said, Dad, there's nothing like this show anywhere. Yeah.
That was cool.
My introduction. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's all I got for you. Do you have anything else for me you'd like before we go?
Oh, no. Just thank you for reaching out and triggering my memories of 35 years ago. thank you, Justin. And I wish you all the best in whatever you're doing with Degrassi. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay,
stay healthy.
Bye. See ya. You too. Bye. So what was the assignment? How did the students get prepared for the Degrassi cast to hear their pitches? Well, let me take you through this project beat by beat. The project began on February 13th, 1989. Degrassi was airing its final episodes of the show Degrassi Junior High, and we weren't really sure if Degrassi High was around the corner just quite yet. In the Degrassi world, the grade 8 kids were being set up to graduate, and no one really knew if they would come back or not. Hines and his students watched a few episodes of Degrassi as it was airing, including The Whole Truth, which was about Caitlin and Liz's protest against animal cruelty, Making Whoopi, which followed Arthur as he dealt with his dad dating a new woman, Black and White, about Michelle and BLT's interracial relationship, and Can't Live With Him, an iconic episode that follows Wheels as he deals with the loss of his parents. After watching the episodes in class, the students would then complete assignments, where they'd list all the characters that were in the episode, they'd write down their goals, and the obstacles that were standing in their way. Together, they'd learn how Degrassi built their characters to make each of them unique. They'd also get a crash course in how to write a screenplay. They read a script for the episode called Big Girl Now, which follows Lucy as she has a conflict with her boyfriend Paul. About 2 weeks later, the students would then take everything they've learned about building characters, writing scripts, and they would generate 3 pitches that could happen in the final moments of Degrassi Junior High. Over the next 3 weeks, they'd work on their pitches and develop one of their ideas into an actual script. And on the very last day, 2 actors from Degrassi would visit their school and hear what they had to say. What was really fun about this idea is that Hines actually knew in advance which 2 Degrassi actors would be coming to his school. Irene Caracos and Celia Xesanasi played Alexa and Yik on Degrassi, and they were specifically chosen by Degrassi's publicist Catherine Ellis for this project. Later, Catherine's going to be on the podcast to tell us why that is. But for now, knowing who was coming to the school was a huge bonus for Hines, who could prepare more diligently for the class. He picked episodes that featured Alexa and Yik, or episodes that painted a clear idea of how Degrassi told its stories, gearing up his students for a script perfectly suited for Alexa and Yik on Degrassi. Together, they broke down Alexa and Yik's characters to understand what made them similar and what made them different. Hines pointed out that Alexa tended to think with her heart, while Yik tended to think with his head. Hines even presented questions like, what would happen if Alexa had a crush on Lucy's boyfriend? What would happen if Liz and Spike became friends with Yik? Or what would it take for Dr. Sally to be invited to Degrassi Junior High? That was a really fun one. In total, there were 13 students who each pitched their own stories, which means there were almost 40 brand new storylines pitched and presented to Degrassi. Though Catherine Ellis has clarified that even though she is literally married to the head writer Yan Moore, their story ideas wouldn't actually be used for the show. If you want to complete Hines' project, you can visit patreon.com/DegrassiKid, where we release bonus content every Wednesday. I'll be including my own story ideas that only patrons will be able to see. But for now, let's listen into the story ideas that got pitched to Alexa and Yik on Degrassi. John Baylor put Alexa and Yik at the center of conflict in his script titled It's Mine. Here's what John wrote for his project. Yik loses his essay and Alexa finds it. When she tries to pass it off as her own, the principal suspends both of them for plagiarism. Yik protests to no avail, and Joey takes a driver's training course but gets into an accident. What I do think is actually funny about this is that some of these storylines kind of do happen in Degrassi. I mean, 2 years from now, we are going to get a storyline where Joey takes a driving class with Snake and Nancy, and one of them do not pass. So that's interesting. But we have been reassured that none of these storylines actually ended up in the show from the students. This is the script that John actually presented to Irene and Celiac when they visited his school, but he did also come up with 2 other pitches that were equally as great. John wrote, "Here's Yik. Yik goes on a practical joking spree, but goes too far when he hurts Spike by getting ink all over the dress she's planning to wear to a job interview." Which, again, is pretty close to the storyline we get with Ellie and Paige, where Ellie and Paige are going for a job interview and Paige spills some juice on Ellie. John also suggests an episode called Agape, which is the Greek word for love. He writes, "Yik thinks he's fallen in love with Alexa, but he doesn't quite know how to tell her. Arthur helps him write a secret admirer letter, but Alexa catches Yik putting it on her locker." That is giving me Rick and Terry vibes from The Next Generation, I'm just saying. Anyway, some other standout pitches come from Carrie Langley, who wrote, "Get Up, Stand Up." This episode follows Alexa, who is upset about the restrictions placed on female students at Degrassi. Alexa proves a point by joining the boys' football team. Meanwhile, Yik tries out to become a cheerleader. Joey, who is not in support of either of these characters and their antics, finds out that his mother was denied a job because she's a woman. I think that is a really well-thought episode. It really considers the A plot, the B plot, the C plot, and how they all connect together. That little punch with Joey's mom not getting a job because she's a woman, I really, really think puts the emphasis on the necessity of this episode. And of course, it's a standout one to me because a girl joining the boys' football team is exactly what Jane goes through on Degrassi, and Paula Brancati is our guest next week. Carrie also pitched some exciting episodes like The Doctor's Inn, which follows Yik as he seeks out some extra cash. It kind of gives me Sex Ed vibes, a TV show in the UK that follows, he's a son of a sex therapist in high school and ends up giving out advice. Well, that is basically the idea that Carrie pitched. She said Yik opens up an after-school tutoring club, but quickly it turns into a psychiatry office with the kids referring to him as Dr. Yu. He gets put into an uncomfortable position when a student can find something in him that could lead to a lot of trouble for the school. Sarah Oldring suggests Tough Choice, where Alexa attends an anti-abortion rally to protest against the killing of innocent babies. She soon learns that there are two sides to every story when she hears that Caitlin has been assaulted and must face the decision of an abortion. Meanwhile, Spike is feeling deprived of her social life and begins neglecting her baby, which is a serious mistake. Sarah Oldring really said, "Oh, you want a Degrassi pitch? I'll give you a Degrassi pitch." Ian pitches a story about Alexa trying out as a drummer for the Zit Remedy, and she's really good. But Joey has a problem with it because she's a girl, and girls can't be rock stars. Kevin pitches an idea called No Solution, where Alexa and Yik find out that Spike attempted suicide due to the problems with her baby. And Kevin is the one to answer, what would it take for Dr. Sally to come to Degrassi? He comes with an idea that involves Spike and Yik. Spike's working at the drugstore, and Yik comes in to buy condoms for a prank. Then she pulls some strings and gets Dr. Sally in to have a talk with him. In another pitch, Alexa starts a gossip column in the school newspaper, which gains popularity, but soon Yik writes an anonymous letter asking for advice that could be dangerous. Steve writes a pitch that says Caitlin goes punk. What's the school's reaction? What do Spike and Liz do to her hair that make her stand out in a crowd? And other students went wild with writing themselves into their own storylines. These are all great pitches and ones that I could actually imagine happening on Degrassi. And what's absolutely crazy is by a stroke of pure luck, I was able to find one of these students and connect with them. Heidi McCurdy is a singer from Vancouver who went on to build a career in soul and R&B music. But before that, Heidi was a 17-year-old girl in Hein Singer's creative writing class. Heidi pitched three ideas of her own, including Cat Got Your Tongue, which follows Yik having a crush on Alexa, and Lucy going into the hospital after someone spikes her drink at a party. Jealousy's a Joke follows Liz's jealousy over Alexa, because she's now become closer friends with Spike. And Money Troubles, where Shane proposes to Spike, Yik finds a wallet that contains over $200, just enough for that brand new bike he's been yabbing on about, and Alexa comes down with a serious illness. I was able to reach out to Heidi, who was pretty surprised to see one of her old high school assignments pop up in her email almost 35 years later, but she remembered the class and the impact it made on her, and she left some very important comments for me. This is what she said. The class project was very impactful for me, and most definitely encouraged my writing dreams. I went to university for creative writing, but then got focused on developing a career in music. But still, 35 years later, I have aspirations of writing for the stage and the screen. Heidi said a standout memory from her was receiving the encouraging feedback for her assignment. She said, "If I remember correctly, they said mine had real potential, which was very thrilling. My 17-year-old self recalls that they may have said something about using my story as an inspiration, but I may have made that up," she said, with a coy winky face attached. When I asked Heidi why the show Degrassi meant so much to her, she said, "I appreciate that the show covered a mix of topics that were both light and serious. It was similar to real life and had a lot of sensitivity and insight. It was very unique for TV at the time," she said. But Heidi didn't just pitch these ideas in front of the cast. Heidi also pitched these ideas in front of Catherine Ellis, Degrassi's publicist and partner of head writer Yann Moore. Catherine, it's my understanding that Degrassi was out on the west coast of Canada doing a publicity tour at the time, and you guys had visited all these places like Kamloops, Vancouver, and White Rock. Do you have any memories from doing this tour with Irene and Siliak?
Some I have that I wouldn't put on record. I might tell you later, but nothing terrible, just like, you know, we're a bit silly. But we went to Kamloops first, and we went to some schools, and I have pictures of them doing improv. And I mean, Irene is absolutely fearless. And again, I was watching whichever one it was. And when she comes in and she says to Michelle, "You don't want to know," like, she can do stuff like that. Just act totally silly. And I think I might have asked Judy who would be good for cold readings and improv. So that's how I got Irene and Celia, because it's an odd combination. But we always went with an odd combination. We never would go with like the twins or is it Remedy or, you know, or two like Melanie and Caitlin. We would always really mix to a jarring degree who we would bring. And I said, what we like to do is we'll tell you who we'll bring. So this time it was Celia and Irene, and who are both very fearless and very fun people to be around. And so we were in Kamloops, and as I said, they went to a school. I think they were on TV as well. I can't remember all the details. Then we flew out to Vancouver, and I think we were on Switchback on the Sunday morning. And then I think we may have had the day, and we did a lot of fun things. We went wading in the water there by the beach, and went to an arcade and played air hockey and stuff like that. And went to a restaurant that was outdoors and had cats walking all around. It was really fun. That was the sort of off the record-ish sort of stuff that we, and you know, there's never anything for me to do in the evening. So you have to hang out and do stuff. And then we would, the next day, I think we went down to, it was White Rock, I think was where the school was. And I didn't really remember it until I saw the picture of the gym that you had sent me. And I, oh yeah, I remember sitting in that gym. And I was thinking about how cool it must have been to have written something for Alexa and then have the actress who actually plays Alexa do the lines with you. I mean, they were playing other roles and stuff too. And I remember being quite impressed with the level of writing. And I said in my quotation that it was as good as some professional stuff I'd seen. And I would not have said that if it wasn't true. I mean, I don't remember the specifics now, but I do remember that I was really impressed with what high quality it was. And they really seemed to capture the feel quite well. And sometimes, you know, people would send in things on spec, and those kids could have had a better chance than some of the people who did send to us. So I think that Heinz must have been a great teacher. And I know a lot of teachers used Degrassi for teaching in those days. And I mean, I hope some of those kids went into some sort of field where their writing skills would be useful.
Yeah, I'm curious, in your words, why do you think Degrassi is the kind of show that would be good for that type of project?
Well, when I was in my teaching career, I used Degrassi. Also, I did teaching stuff before I was a teacher. That I had a script writing workshop for your classroom, and I would go to schools, and I was paid by the distributors of the show. And they would say, you know, go to this school, do your workshop, and then they would pay me an amount. And that would be a perk for the school if they bought like the whole series or something. I don't know what the deal was, but they had to, if they bought so much, they would get a free workshop person coming, a real Degrassi person who would come in, and I would get the kids. And actually, you would be amazed at how good some of the stuff that they did. Like, I'd say, okay, here we are. Here's how it works. Who do you want to have as your main character? What's their problem? What's in the way of what they want? And we would map out an outline on the chalkboard. And then I would, like, if the kids were, say, it's seven groups or something, I'd break it into seven scenes very quickly. And I'd say, you're writing scene one, scene two, scene three, scene four, scene five. And then when I would go around and just make sure that they were on track and everything was fine. And sometimes I would take a little telling detail, but usually not. Then at the end of the class, they would read out their parts and they would go just seamlessly from group to group. And it would work.
That is so cool. I want to be a part of one of those classes so badly. I got to bring them back.
I did them in my own classroom, although as time went on, we needed to get away from the Degrassi idea because people didn't really know who Degrassi was anymore. Oh. Well, they did, but it was different. And it was, you know, Drake, and it was, you know, the more modern Degrassi incarnations. But I really didn't know those characters as well, because once I wasn't working there anymore, I kept up with it a bit, but I wasn't in detail with it anymore. But yeah, so I did those. But though, going back to Heinz and his class, I think that, you know, he must have made really good use. They must have looked and taken apart some of the scripts to see how they worked.
Heinz had mentioned that during this trip, there was a huge influx of fans who were calling the school. They were trying to get tickets. Kids had skipped school to come wait outside to try to see the Degrassi kids. Was that a common experience, that when they would go on these tours, it would just kind of be like Beatles mania, but for the Degrassi kids?
Kind of. I don't know if I knew that about the kids from the other schools. It doesn't surprise me though, because when we went to public places, it was Beatlemania stuff. I mean, obviously not the level of Beatlemania, but the same feeling of like unrestrained adoration. And like when we went to malls, we went to one, I think in Kamloops actually, which wasn't so bad. Was it Kamloops? Anyway, somewhere in BC where we had the kids from Northwood were also there, and which was a contemporary show, a teenage show. And they said to us, how come your show is more popular than ours? They seem the same. And kids didn't know. And I don't know, because I like Northwood, actually. But it, for some reason, Degrassi caught in a way that Northwood didn't quite. I mean, it was popular, but it was just not in the same way. But in Ottawa, I had to yell at everybody and get security because they were pushing the tables back, but there was no floor for them to go. And so these kids were kind of leaning on the tables to get their autographs, and they were getting pushed back. And I had to stand up, and I wasn't even a teacher then, and my biggest teacher voice say, everybody take one step backwards. You're crushing them. And they did, actually. And then the security kind of came in and started dealing with it. I think they hadn't realized how they were pushing the tables in, but I was behind, so I could see that it was happening. And it was a little bit scary because there was a wall behind them, so there was nowhere to go.
Wow, that's incredible. It is so interesting to hear the full behind-the-scenes story of what it's like to be a real Degrassi kid who travels and does all these type of live events and meet and greets and school programs. That is so, so cool. Well, Catherine, thank you so much for your time. But for now, let's get back to our story and learn a little bit more about the Degrassi cast and their visit to Earl Marriott Secondary School. I got really lucky with this interview because when I reached out to Hines, he immediately asked for my mailing address. When I received the package a few days later in the mail, I realized that Hines had actually sent me real newspaper clippings from 1989. He sent me the original opinion piece where his students wrote in about sex and violence on TV. He sent me the Vancouver Sun, which covered Degrassi's visit to the school. And he sent me Earl Marriott's student newspaper, which put this story on their front page. But probably the coolest part was that Hines actually sent me photocopies of a textbook that featured his assignment. If you want to try this assignment yourself, go to patreon.com/DegrassiKid and give it a shot. What's amazing is that journalists were able to attend this event and be an open ear to all the questions that the kids were asking Celiac and Irene. A lot of them asked questions like, how did you get your part on the show? Do you go to a regular high school just like us? And how much money do you make? Celiac replied in classic fashion, well, it's more than babysitting. To answer their questions, Irene and Celiac talked about what life is like on set as real students themselves. Just like everyone else, they'd get their homework from their teachers, but then they'd bring it to the Degrassi set and have their on-set tutor help them through it. Their tutor, Laura Vickers, said that because the show mostly filmed in the summer, the kids didn't miss a lot of school. But during the school months, they could miss up to 8 classes in a month. They wanted to make sure that they could still have a good work-life balance. And honestly, you may only miss 8 classes a month if you're one of the lead characters in that episode. If you're one of the background characters, you might only miss a handful instead. Irene said she also got very good at arts and crafts on set while she was waiting around for things to start rolling. For Christmas, the Degrassi kids actually made ornaments while they were at the school, and Irene boasted, I could make over 40 a day, she said. Celiac shared that he took up knitting on set to pass time. At the end, Catherine revealed to the class that they wouldn't have to worry about the finale of Degrassi Junior High. Even though the school was coming to an end, the show would continue on as Degrassi High and all their favorite characters would be coming back, including Alexa and Yik, whose stories were about to get juicier than ever. But before they left, they actually filmed a half-hour program for Earl Marriott Television, which premiered on Shaw TV about a month or so later. But after emailing the school and trying to get in touch with the network, no one was able to find it. Bummer. But why does this even matter? Like, honestly, how come a school assignment from 35 years ago is such a big deal? Well, to answer that question, we have to go back a little further, to 1977, where we'll learn why this moment means so much to Degrassi's history. Degrassi's co-creator, Linda Schuyler, was a school teacher who felt like there wasn't enough media for kids to see themselves in. There were lots of shows like Sesame Street and Mr. Dress Up that were made for younger kids. There were more grown-up shows like Three's Company that showed what it's like to be a young adult. But there were no shows for the in-between. There were no shows that showed her grade 8 students. So she decided to make it. Together, Linda and her students made their own short films on these Super 8 cameras. She worked with the district in getting film equipment and taught them how to use it and tell their own stories. Linda was one of the first teachers who pioneered the use of filmmaking as a learning tool in her classroom. Together, they made a documentary called Between Two Worlds, where Linda explored what their life was like at school as young Canadians and what their lives were like as home, because many of them came from immigrant families. In 1977, Linda actually wrote an article for an academic newspaper called Curriculum Connections. In this article, Linda shares how it's a passion of hers to help students learn about filmmaking so they could be more aware of the things they're seeing on TV. "My goal is to help students develop standards for critical thinking analysis," she said, "so they can become active viewers rather than passive consumers." Something that Heinz's class did when they wrote in and shared their opinion about violence and sex on TV after watching Degrassi. Linda also felt that film and television were becoming the new literature for young students and how they received information. "TV is becoming a part of everyday life," she said. Linda's goal was to create films that put kids at the center of their own stories and actually take them seriously. This is honestly what the entire foundation of Degrassi has been built on. 2 years later, Linda produced a short film called Ida Makes a Movie about a 7-year-old girl who enters a filmmaking competition and learns a lesson about honesty and telling the truth. This short film will become what we now know as the first episode of Degrassi. Then, only 10 years later, Degrassi has become so successful at telling teen stories and telling them authentically that it's now being used as a lesson in classrooms across the country. And I don't just mean Heinz Sanger's class. I mean, Degrassi was being developed alongside Health Canada, who use this show as a resource in class. I, for example, saw my very first episode of Degrassi in grade 7 when I attended a health class. That was in 2007. In the end, Linda Schuyler set out to make a television show that spoke to young people and encouraged them to speak their minds back. Heinz Sanger saw the value in that and made an entire educational experience that would impact his students for a lifetime. Heinz understood the value of Degrassi as a learning tool, and that's how his grade 12 students got to pitch their brand new ideas to the actual people at Degrassi. If you want to complete Heinz's project, you can go to patreon.com/DegrassiKid, where you can download the worksheet, and you can find my pitches for this assignment as well, including the very first scene of a Degrassi script written by Degrassi Kid. Visit patreon.com/DegrassiKid and share the stories that you'd like to see on screen. I want to know, if you could write an episode of Degrassi, what would it be about? How could you make sure you were seen on screen? And maybe, just maybe, the Degrassi cast will come to your school and hear what you have to say. Thank you so much to Heinz Sanger, Catherine Ellis, Heidi McCurdy, and all the other students who participated in this project. Deep diving into this moment in Degrassi's history has been such a rewarding experience for me. It has been so amazing to connect with all of these people. I'm also so thrilled to thank Daniela, Nathan, and Allie who joined the Degrassi Kid Patreon this week. Your support has been a huge help in making this podcast possible. I appreciate it so much. And of course, a thank you to our Degrassi Student Council team on Patreon, Amber, Nicholas, Sarah J, and my best friend, Stevie Jarawa, for making this possible. And all of our other Patreon friends like Amy, Alana, Annie Clark, Becca, Brittany, Brian, Chantel, Christine, Chrissy, Daniela, Dave, Degrassi CSI, Emily, Evie, the editor of this podcast, Ethan, Eugene, Gina, Hannah, Isabel, Jasper, Jay, Jackie, Joe, Joey, Catherine, Kristen, Crystal, Kat, Courtney, Kylea, Lizzie Games, Lindsay, Mackenzie, Marisa, Mark, Mike, Megan, Mina, Maddie, Molly, Nancy, Rachel, Randy, Rebecca, Racine, Shannon, Shane, Stephanie, Sierra, Sunny, and Nixon from the Degrassi Generations Facebook group. We could not do this without you guys. I love you. Bye.